WATD presents Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
If it's Monday night, it's got to be Monday Night Talk with Kevin Tachi. So thanks for having me on.
Kevin, good for you to hold back and let him tell his story.
Putting the South Shore spin on politics, current events, and pop culture.
You guys are the center of the universe today, at least the political universe.
I believe both of you are from the area. Marshfield guys, yes, no?
Correct, yeah.
That's right.
There's only one person not from Marshfield in this room right now. That's you.
It's me. I'm the outcast.
Well, you've always been generous with the time. I appreciate it very much.
Well, I'm honored to be on your show tonight, Kevin, with that impressive lineup you have.
I believe our guest that we've been waiting for, Congressman Stephen Lynch.
Kevin, good to join you.
The governor of the Commonwealth,
very
Charlie
good.
Baker. You ready?
I got to tell you that it was really nice to hear Aerosmith on the intro there.
You're going
to
be the rock and roll governor?
I don't know about that, but...
We have Mayor Joe Sullivan joining us. Sir, how are you?
Well, Kevin, very good to be with you again.
Dr. Drew Pinsky. Dr. Drew, are you there?
I'm here. Thanks for having me.
Mr. Ming Tsai, welcome to the show, sir.
Hey, thanks, Kevin.
Massachusetts State Auditor Suzanne Bump. Hello, Auditor. How are you?
I am fine, and I'm delighted to be with you this evening.
And now, your host, Kevin Tachi.
Welcome to the last Monday of the 2019 summer. My name is Kevin Tachi. And I am joined here in studio by one of our premier sponsors. He also likes co-hosting. The other day, it's like, oh, you know, I need to begin. I need to get more airtime as usual. And he's right as to when we have him in, we have some pretty good conversation. I'm talking about none other than Richard Rosen.
Good evening, Mr. Tachi.
How are you, sir?
Well, you know, I need more airtime to practice because when I retire, my new profession will be radio host.
Really?
Well, I don't know.
What would you talk about? What would be the concept of your radio show?
Oh, it depends which night it would be.
Really? Wow, yeah. You're looking at me.
I mean, I've
nights.
Watched you for so long that, you know...
Yeah, but you could do it better.
Well, I don't know about that, but...
I think you could do
better. You do an awful lot of homework and research and stuff. I'm not sure about that. I like Larry Glick. When Larry Glick used to be on, he would just talk about anything and say stupid stuff, and it was really great.
Yeah, I don't think I would be afforded that. I would be afforded... See, Larry had a special skill set.
He did. He was pretty amazing.
He did. He was really good at what he did.
And he took an awful lot of phone calls. He was on the radio, I think... 5 hours a night? That was a long time.
You're definitely going to open up the phone lines at some point in time.
Yeah,
and let other
that's
people
a long
talk.
Time.
You don't want to be sitting and talking.
No.
And speaking of, which is kind of the concept of this show, this particular show is more of a radio magazine, news radio magazine program. I'm saying that correctly.
It's a very informative show.
It's an informative show, the idea. We try to start out the first part with, you know, issues and... things that are happening up at the State House, as is the case tonight. And so we're going to start out with Kathy Lenatra.
That was a great segue.
You like that? Kathy Lenatra is going to be the next, I don't want to call her a victim, but she's going to be the next candidate who's going to be dancing with the dignitaries. It's coming up on September 8th. Folks may remember that our very own Rob Hackler Jr. did the dancing with the dignitaries, and as you'll find out, Rob is actually one of the guest judges. But we're going to speak with Kathy to get Kathy's take on participating in this fantastic event.
I can't wait to ask her a couple of questions after looking at the roster of people that are going to be dancing. It's concerning to me.
Is it really?
Well, I know a couple of those people, and I'm like curious how long they're going to dance and if they're really going to be there.
See, my thing is about being the judges. It's an interesting judging panel. You got Joe McDonald, Vinny DiMacita, who are going to be your judges. So it'll be very interesting to see how the makeup is and what her particular dance is. I'm looking forward to that. Now, you and I, of course, are going to be the buffer in between. We'll chat a little bit because we'd like to catch up as to what's going on with McGuigan's Pub, but it isn't just McGuigan's Pub anymore. Now, right down the street, Washington Street, 552 Washington Street to be exact, is the patio at McGuigan's. We'll find out what's going on, the latest going on there. And then we will chat with State Senator Patrick O'Connor as he'll give us his update, his State House report, per se. Second hour, it's going to be interesting. Knowing that one of your restaurants actually has a plant-based burger, we have Stanley Chase III, who is the founder of Louisville's Vegan Jerky to talk about the alternative meat industry and where it's heading in its popularity. Then we got Laura Fitzgerald Kemet. She is the chair of the Hanson Board of Selectmen. She's going to chat a little bit about recently her board had a discussion about some of their goals. And some of their goals are focused on the town, and we'll find out what exactly those goals are and what she hopes to achieve. And then we'll close things out with Mike Joshua. Mike, of course, we know him as the host of WATD's Americanorama and the Midnight Bong, but he's also the executive director of Plymouth Rocks Events. I'm going to talk about a couple of upcoming events in September. One of those events being at Plymouth Memorial Hall, the other at the Spire Center. So we'll talk a little bit about that.
Met our friend Dave at this year's Cigarbecue. Listen, Dave, it's not that I don't like the government. You got me all wrong. It's, I don't like a tyrannical government that rips its people off under the pretense of taking care of us, telling us the money is going to be used for something and then using it for something else. Obviously not the MBTA. No, no, no. 18's not an adult. 21 is an adult. Oh, by the way, you can't have that flavor and you can't have that style now that you're a big person. But go ahead, go down the bar and drink all the flavored booze you can and get as clobbered as you want. You want to talk about community impact? They finally fixed 44 down at Plymouth Ragua. It only took 20 years. How's that for community impact? Brennan's Smoke Shop, Plymouth, Pembroke, Brockton, Wareham, Raynham, Taunton, Stoughton, New Bedford. Brennan's Smoke Shop, the best smoke shop in Massachusetts, because we pay our taxes. Dave.
Be a part of the show. Call in and join in on the conversation. 781-837-4900. Now, back to Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
Okay, we're back for our first segment, Mr. Rosen. Are you ready for your first segment?
I am ready, Mr. Tachi. How are you tonight?
See, I'm surprised because normally you would have your dancing shoes for a segment like this.
I'm looking at some of these people that are dancing and I'm very concerned.
Well, why is that?
Because I know some of these people and that's going to be ugly.
Why? Well, hold on.
I'm sure it's going to be a wonderful event. It's just, I have some questions here.
And of course, what he's talking about, Richard is talking about dancing with the dignitaries. This is the coalition is teaming up with the Fred Astaire Dance Studio of Plymouth. This is going to be a fantastic night. And joining us is one of the participants, Representative Kathy Lenatra. Representative, how did they approach you to ask you to do this?
Well, Kevin, thanks for having me. They approached me by a phone call, actually. And to be quite honest, I thought it was Representative Muratori pulling a practical joke on me, because I know he had done it in the past. But it was not, and I have committed. And when I commit to something, I commit to win. I play to win. So I'm actually looking forward to this on September 8th.
And this is for actually a fantastic cause, is it not? Is it? It's for the Plymouth County.
Go ahead. County Suicide Prevention Coalition. So the coalition is teaming up with the Fred Astaire Studios. They've done this in the past. This is, of course, my first time. Really looking forward to it. You know, it's a very serious issue. Suicide is one of the leading yet preventable public health problems that we have in Massachusetts. And, you know, it's the second leading cause of death of youth and adults aged 15 to 34. So it's a very, very serious issue that we have that is preventable. And we're just having a fun night, raising some funds. And I'm looking forward to it.
Richard, I'll let you ask the first question of the representative.
Well, Representative, I see some of the dignitaries that are dancing. Who actually do they dance with? That's my question.
Oh, so that's a good question. So we dance with the instructors of the Fred Astaire Dance Studio. I am lucky enough to dance with the actual manager of the studio. His name is Lee Williams. I believe he won last year. But can I read off who's dancing?
Please do.
So we have Patrick Flaherty, who is a Plymouth selectman. Sergeant Scott Heil, he's Bridgewater Police Department. Sarah Cloud, she works for Beth Israel Deaconess in Plymouth. We have myself and Constance DeLego. She's the former Interim Council on Aging Director.
Okay, so it's worth noting is that it looks as though there was a a modification. So we do not have a county commissioner dancing in this dance-off?
You know what? I thought that we did. I'm looking at the one that was just posted 4 hours ago. So I wonder if he just was sweating the competition.
Hmm.
Well, that's the person. Hmm. That is the one person that I was very concerned about.
Is that the person you were concerned about?
I know him well, and I might even go if I thought that he was dancing.
Oh, well, I will have to confirm that he's not, but this is the latest list that I have. But he may have caught, you know, a glimpse of myself dancing with Lee and backed out. Not sure, but I will look into that. But we do have some great guest judges as well, so it's going to be a fun night. Oh, and of course, Master of Ceremonies is your all, you know, Plymouth's finest, Matt Muratori, Representative State Rep. From Plymouth, Matt Muratori.
Who you actually thought was pranking you about this.
I did. So he will be the Master of Ceremonies. Then our guest judges, we have Christine Harvey, and she's actually a professional judge from Fred Astaire Dance Studio.
Okay.
We have Joe McDonald, Plymouth County Sheriff, and your own Rob, now tell me Rob's last name, Hakala.
Rob Hakala Jr., yep.
Yes, he's one of the judges. Senator DeMacedo is one, and then a Captain John Shawstead, and he's from the Plimpton Fire Department.
See, it's interesting, because I believe that Robert danced last year. Now, I don't know how well he did, but it looks as though they bumped him upstairs to be a judge.
Oh, he must have done well, though. I've seen him at a Rotary, so if he can, you know, he rocks the Rotary when he does that, so I'm sure he rocked the dance floor as well.
That's fantastic. And this event happening on September 8th.
Go ahead. Sorry.
It was at Emerald Hall in Abington, 30 Central Street.
Yes. And tickets are $40 per person. Under 18, it's only $20. And that includes the buffet dinner, cash bar, tons of raffles are coming in. And then there will also be professional dancers there as well for an exhibition. And people can get their tickets on brownpapertickets.com/event, and they can just search for the Plymouth County Suicide Prevention Dancing with the Dignitaries.
How important is this event when it comes to suicide and helping folks in need?
You know, it's really, really important. One of the things that they do in the coalition is they train first responders on how to deal with mental health issues. And this is all free to the first responders. All their trainings are free. So this will help that initiative, getting out and training our first responders, our teachers, and things of that nature. So it's very important. And like I said, it's the second leading cause of death between the ages of 15 and 34. And, you know, everybody has been touched in some way. My family has just been touched recently. My husband, one of his partners when he was a detective in New York City, has just recently committed suicide, and he was there for the funeral. And it not only affects, you know, even though it's the second leading cause of death between those ages, above that, you know, we see it in our senior citizens, we see it in my age group, I've seen a lot of it. So it's so important. Mental health is such an important thing, and we need to get rid of the stigma around it.
Well, what has it been like? Now, do you have a particular dance, or do you have a set of dances? And what have practices been going like for you?
So practices, we have 10 lessons with our professional dancer. I unfortunately was away on a training, and then my dance instructor was away on vacation. So we've had 2 15-minute sessions, but we're going to jam-pack it in the next 2 weeks. It's one dance. We're dancing the cha-cha, and I believe it's to the group, but I hope it's One Direction, correct? I keep saying First Direction or something. My daughter keeps laughing at me. So it's a cha-cha. We're looking forward to it. I have special dance shoes that I'm wearing, trying to break those in.
Ooh.
And getting ready.
Richard?
So how long does each team of dancers actually dance?
It's about a minute and 30 seconds. But let me tell you, it's the longest minute and 30 seconds of your life.
I'm sure it is.
but this is an event that starts at 2:30, goes until, what, about 6 o'clock? Is that right?
Around there, yeah.
Now, is it going to be like, so once the competition is decided, do they like open up the floor and everybody gets to dance? What happens?
I don't know. I haven't been there. So this is my first time here. So what I'm assuming and what I've told is, you know, we each dance one at a time, are the ones that are dancing, and then we're judged, and then we're judged by dollar bills, I believe. So I believe they pass the hat. So if you're coming to support me, bring lots of dollar bills. And then we'll have some auctions. There'll be some auctions. There'll be some great raffles. I've seen some of them. And then the professional dancers will dance, and they'll do an exhibition, which will be nice. And again, you it's a buffet dinner. I hear it's a lovely dinner. They do a really nice job there at the Emerald Club, and a cash bar.
And again, remember, this is all taking place to assist a fantastic organization, the Plymouth County Suicide Prevention Coalition. Now, if you want to get tickets, you can purchase them at brownpapertickets.com/event/430-6018. I think if you just went on brownpapertickets.com and searched for Dancing with the Dignitaries, you might be safe too, but I don't want to talk out of turn here. So again, brownpapertickets.com/events/430-6018 is what I have for information here. And if you are under 18, you can go through Jenny Babcock to get tickets. Is that correct?
That is correct. And tickets under 18 are only $20.
Oh, that's fantastic. Well, yes. Representative, we want to thank you for joining us. Anything you want to say in closing, in regards to this fantastic fundraiser that you're participating in?
Well, I would love as many people as possible that could come and go. Come and just witness this great event. I'm sure it'll be all over Facebook when it's over, but it's nothing like being there and supporting this wonderful cause.
And we want to thank you. I want to thank you personally for bringing it to my attention as someone who is humbled to have the state representatives and state senators and a lot of the constitutional officers be a part of this program, especially during the State House report. It's fantastic to hear some of the things that you're participating in as being a part of the community. So we thank you for reaching out to us, and we wish you the best of luck. Lots of dollar bills.
Thank you, Kevin. Thank you, Kevin.
So now you do realize that we're going to have you back on in late September for an update. And
Sure. Hopefully I'll have a trophy when I come back.
That would be fantastic. I don't know how it would work on radio, but we'll take a picture.
We'll take a picture. There we go. Sure. That sounds great.
All right. We thank you so much for joining us, Representative.
Thank you so much. Have a wonderful evening.
You got it, Representative. Again, we were just speaking with the State Representative Kathy Lenatra, who is going to be a part of the Dancing with the Dignitaries event that's taking place on September 8th. This will be at the Emerald Hall in Abington. And again, we'll make sure we put this information up. And I believe, I wouldn't doubt it if Rob Hackler will have something to do with this, seeing that he is a guest judge. But I turned my attention to my co-host, and this gives me an opportunity just to kind of tease a little bit of a conversation whenever Richard is on with us. We usually take a few moments to talk a little bit about both of his establishments, as he is a proud sponsor of Monday Night Talk. What is the latest going on, whether you want to talk a little bit about McGuigan's Pub or the patio at McGuigan's? What's new?
So we're changing the menu again in the patio.
In the patio?
Yeah, we're going to add a few things. We review it to see what is selling, what isn't selling. We take ideas and suggestions. So within the next 3 or 4 weeks, we're just going to remove a couple of items and add some new and exciting stuff. Now, you know that we have the Whitman Sampler at McGuigan's Pub.
Mm-hmm.
We are now going to come up with the patio platter at the patio, which is a number of the appetizers. So that's kind of exciting. We have a number of different things that we're going to do. So I'm hoping by the end of September, we start our Sunday brunch. We've been meeting with the managers and the chef, and we're going over the menu. And I believe we have the menu put together. I now need to get it in writing. So by the end of September, we're going to do a Sunday brunch, 10 to 2. And once we get our legs under us, we're going to do some themed brunches, like maybe a jazz brunch and some stuff like that.
Bloody Mary brunch.
We're going to do Bloody Mary. I think it's a Bloody Mary bar and a mimosa bar.
You're kidding.
No, we're going to do both of those. Danielle, the manager, is working on those. So we let her work on that stuff, and we're doing the menu.
Okay.
So hopefully by the end of September, we'll have that up and running.
As you know, me and the missus are big brunch people, especially after church.
Yes.
We like to, there's a couple of different spots that we bounce to, and we would be proud to add the patio to the itinerary every other Sunday to pop on by.
And I would be proud to have you and her in as guests, as I always am when you guys show up.
And it's interesting that we should also take a quick note here is that we're going to be talking a little bit about something after the 7 o'clock, just after 7 o'clock, as we're going to talk about plant-based food. The Beyond Burger, something that is, food like that is becoming very, very popular. That beef doesn't necessarily have to be the way. And I got to tell you, the first place that I was introduced to a burger or a vegan type burger was the patio.
Yeah, we have it. And it sells quite well. I mean, there was an awful lot of people that requested that and wanted that. And it's a pretty big seller, the Beyond Burger. It's funny because we had a meeting this morning, and when I changed the menu, we're going to put in parenthesis after the description that it's vegetarian because people are ordering it. It says Beyond Burger. People think it's an actual burger, only to find out that there's no meat in it. However, it does say plant-based. So that's one of the things we're going to change.
But see, that's interesting that you say that because it tastes very much like a burger. That's what my missus, every time we go there, I like to
eat your meal and half of hers.
You say it like it's a bad thing.
Well, I mean, you got to let her eat occasionally.
I do, but she lets me have a quick bite. Now, as I've teased, we have coming up after the 7 o'clock, top of the hour, Stanley Chase III, who is the owner of Louisville Vegan Jerky Company. This is a company, according to my information, he actually founded on accident. But he's kind of our expert as to how plant-based food is really growing in popularity. It's just a great new phenomenon.
I don't want to take away from any of that conversation, but it's now being sold in Burger King. So it's pretty big. One of the other things I'd like to talk about is that on Thursday, October 10th, from 6 to 8, the patio at McGuigan's is going to have its first oyster night. We're going to have a raw bar. So we're going to have fresh oysters from the Prince Caspian Oysters from the Duxbury Oyster Company here in Duxbury.
Oh, you're welcome.
Yes. So that's my...
Should I shuttle them over for you?
So that's my my good friend John McCluskey that is the proprietor of that. So we're going to do that on October 10th. At the patio, and then I'm guessing that we're going to do it some night after that at the pub as well. Those events usually are pretty well received, and we're looking forward to it. Excuse me. It's been a few years since we've done it at the pub. So we have some other events coming up. We're going to have a trivia night at the patio. You know that we have Morgan White Jr. come in every third Wednesday. I'm sorry, the third Wednesday of every month in the pub, but we're going to do a weekly trivia thing at the patio.
So he's just going to make his trip over to 552 from 546.
No, it's not going to be Morgan. I'm sorry, but we're going to hire somebody else to do it on a weekly basis. Ooh. Morgan can't do that commitment.
Okay.
So he'll stay at the pub, and we'll have a different every week at the patio. And, we still have the Irish Sessions and Half Price Pizza and stuff like that.
At McGuigan's.
At McGuigan's. We have the 50-cent wings. Now, the football season started at the pub, and we're going to come up with something, and we're going to have a special at the patio as well. And we're introducing the buckets of beer, 5 beers for $20 or something like that. Several different domestic beers. So we'll be offering that actually every day of the week. So,
do you ever stop? Does it? Because every time you and I talk, there's something new. It's like you're never satisfied. You're always adding and subtracting.
I mean, you have to. And we've had this discussion before. I just heard a saying lately. I kind of like it. If you rest, you rust. I'd never heard that. I'm not interested in resting. I mean, what are you going to do? I mean, so no, you have to be fluid. You have to be able to change. You have to be able to change with the times, with the economy, with everything. And you try to always put out your best product, and that's what we strive for. You know, and I tell everybody that works for me, I want them to strive for perfection every minute of every day. It doesn't mean you're going to have it, but if you strive for it, you're going to be damn close to it. So that's what we like to do, strive for perfection.
We got another minute or two left in this segment. Anything else you want to share, or do you want to just give out the information as far as the websites if folks want to find out about menus or other entertainment that might be happening.
Well, entertainment, we're actually doing it now that summer is pretty much over. We're doing entertainment both Friday and Saturday nights at both restaurants.
Okay.
So we have bands, a single person or a duo or whatever. It's not like big bands in both restaurants Friday and Saturday nights. So there's entertainment now in Whitman Center, which some people just simply can't believe because Whitman is actually, because of these two restaurants, it's becoming a destination point. You know, I always say this and it sounds hokey, but I love going outside on a Friday or Saturday night and seeing the center full of cars. It excites me to see the center that busy.
Wait, you mean you missed the tumbleweeds that used to, at one point in time, used to kind of roll through the center?
Yeah, they would start at about 6 o'clock and they would just roll right down Washington Street.
It's worth noting as well, and I don't know if you had a chance because the podcast from last week is up, but hopefully we can find a way to get Monk Duane to perform your neighbor in one of your two restaurants. That would be fantastic. I'd come out for that night.
Yeah, I would like to have him come in. And maybe you can do a remote broadcast that night.
That could be interesting.
Well, you know, we'll see.
Well, it usually happens on a Monday, so you're going to have to move things around unless it's a trivia night.
We'll make it work.
We'll make it work. Websites, if folks want to find out more information.
So McGuigan's Pub is McGuigan's Pub, McGuigan'sPub.com. 781-447-7333. And the patio at McGuigan's is the patio at McGuigan's.com. And it is 781-447-2525.
Okay, that wraps up this particular segment. Coming up in just a few moments, we have joining us State Senator Patrick O'Connor will be joining us, kind of a continuation of our State House report. You know, earlier in our opening segment here, we were talking with Representative Catherine Lenatra, but get things from the Senate side with Senator O'Connor in just a few moments. You are listening to 95.9 WATD Monday Night Talk. We'll be back in just a moment.
Is Monday Night Talk with your host Kevin Tachi on 95.9 WATD.
The new patio at McGuigan's offers alfresco dining in downtown Whitman. Seafood lovers will love the shrimp scampi, lobster leg tacos, and fish tacos. If you prefer something meatier, the patio's braised short rib dinner and 14-ounce pork chops are customer favorites. Into the latest food trends? Try the patio's Beyond Burger and flatbread pizza. The patio has 7 55-inch TVs and a 9-foot video wall, making it the perfect place to eat, drink, and socialize. And don't forget McGuigan's Pub next door. They're located at 546 and 552 Washington Street in Whitman.
This weight loss segment brought to you by Signature Healthcare, providing a team approach to weight loss, including medical and surgical options. Here's Dr. Deborah Abeles, chief of Signature Healthcare's Weight and Wellness Center in Brockton.
When it comes to medical or surgical weight loss, patients now have more options than ever before. At our practice, we're always trying to guide patients to the option that makes the most sense for them. So for some, that may mean surgery to help them lose weight, put their diabetes into remission, or reduce the number of medications that they take. However, there are also less invasive options like our 12-week doctor-supervised medical weight loss program. Patients work with our dietitian and lifestyle counselors while receiving ongoing physician consultation to make sure they are losing weight safely and effectively.
To learn more about Dr. Abeles and see if Signature Healthcare's medical and surgical weight loss approaches may be right for you, visit mysignaturecare.org/weightloss.
Zen Den Health Talks with Mary Kim Carity and Michael Murphy. Tune in to get out of pain, increase athletic performance, and live your best life. Mary and Michael are the co-owners of Zen Den in Norwell, where lives are changed with ancient therapies and functional medicine. Zen Den Health Talks will guide you to live a pain-free life tomorrow night at 7 on 95.9 WATD. Find Monday Night Talk on Facebook and share your opinions. Go to 959watd.com/Monday Night Talk.
Okay, so we return here to Monday Night Talk. It's almost like an extension of the State House report. Joining us for this segment is State Senator Patrick O'Connor. Senator, welcome back to Monday Night Talk, sir.
Kevin, thanks for having me.
I love having folks from the South Shore legislative contingency in on a regular basis. I actually, speaking with Anthony, great job helping to kind of coordinate all this. I was like, hey, if the senator wants to call, and he goes, no, the senator wants to come in. And I know you're here on a regular basis and a lot of different things, whether you're talking to the news department. I know that you have a vested interest in the Talking Information Center that's on the first floor of the building. So it's appreciated that... that you come to a humble little show like Monday Night Talk and hang out for a bit.
No, I always listen to Monday Night Talk, and WATD's awesome. To have this down on the South Shore is a true asset, and obviously I can't speak more highly of the work that the Talking Information Center does, not just for folks here on the South Shore, but throughout the entire Commonwealth, making sure that those who are blind or hard of, lack sight are able to get their news, able to hear some stories. It's really important stuff.
And let's not forget that it's so important to you that you made sure that this budget cycle, were you not able to, you and some of your fellow legislators, able to get a little extra money for on behalf of the Talk Information Center? You want to talk about that for a moment?
Sure, yeah. It was a group of all the legislators where the Talking Information Centers are. They're spread across the Commonwealth, but the biggest one's right here in Marshfield, and this is the one that costs the most to operate because they're actually streaming out to so many different local radio stations that don't have the Talking Information Center throughout the state. So what we were able to do was, a few years ago, this was all covered through the Commission of the Blind. The Commission of the Blind decided to cut some of the funding for the Talking Information Center during one of the sort of challenging budgets. And since that point in time, we've been trying to get that funding line item back. We haven't been able to secure it completely back yet inside that line item, but what we have done is mirrored the exact amount of money, got that money into the Senate budget for the past 3 years, and we've been able to deliver that money without any cuts at all to the Talking Information Center. So we hope that at some point in time it's caked into the budget, that we don't have to do these amendments to the budget to get the money in there, that the state realizes and recognizes the importance of the Talking Information Center as it creates the budget. Mm. But in the meantime, we'll be happy to continuously put in amendments to make sure that operations run smoothly without interruption.
So basically, you're reclaiming lost ground, and hopefully you can maybe build upon that down the road.
Pretty much, and we just want, we have no problem doing it, but we'd love to see this built into the budget so future years, future generations don't have to worry about putting an amendment in, and that folks down at the Talking Information Center don't have to worry every single year if they're going to be funded, that they know that the state has their back and that they're going to be funded just through the general appropriation.
And while we're sitting here, we're talking a little bit about budgetary, finally the fiscal 2020 budget being passed, and it was good of the governor not to want to kind of nitpick. He signed it right into law after it came out of conference committee, which was fantastic to kind of get it underway. Although financing was already kind of, something was already kind of put in place, and if it did happen to extend beyond that. But as a part of the budget, correct me if I'm wrong, talk to me about the Emergency Assistance Shelter Program. This is a policy change, am I correct?
It is. This is one of the first major pieces of policy that I've been able to write and get into law and signed by the governor. This was something that we heard about from a lot of constituents that right now, if you're in emergency assistance shelter housing, essentially if you've gone to a homeless shelter and then you've been placed, so you are at, in some of people's instances, the lowest of the lows. What we were able to do at the state level was to basically say we have your back, because right now, under current law, you can only make 125% federal poverty level, which is $35,000. So a family of three can only make $35,000 until they lose that shelter housing. What we said was, and what the conversations we've had were, a woman came to our office and said that she had to ask her employer to pay her less. People weren't taking jobs. People were saying that they weren't going to take overtime. People had promotions that they turned down, all because they feared that they would lose a roof over their head. Mm. And so what we said was, this is completely counterintuitive to what we're trying to do, which is when people are trying to build themselves back up and to create a foundation for their family, that their fear of losing the roof above their head. So what we said was, we're not going to change the entry requirement. The entry requirement is still you have to make less than $35,000 for a family of three. But once you're in there, we're going to give you some runway and some flexibility. You can make well over $45,000 a year now, that you can take that extra job, you can take those extra hours at work, you can take that promotion, you can get paid more money, you can start a savings account, you can do all these things because the Commonwealth has your back, and that we want to see you succeed. We want to see you move out of emergency assistance housing. We want to see you continuously thrive and give your family the best life it possibly can have. And I think that this is one step in the right direction, where we're basically allowing people to go that extra mile, to do that extra thing and make that extra money because they have some more flexibility now. And that was signed into law and it's gone into effect. So I'm really proud of that because I truly believe it's going to help a lot of families right here on the South Shore, but throughout the entire state.
And we know that homelessness is a major issue. And it's something I see this as being maybe one of the first steps on the road to hopefully ending that.
I think so. I truly do. I you know, it's one of those things that it's such a huge societal issue, and there's so many different components that go into it, whether it be substance misuse disorder, mental illness. There's so many different components of homelessness, but this year, in this year's budget, to continue to keep on that theme, we supported organizations like Father Bill's, we supported organizations like Carolina Hill, we supported organizations with the most amount of money we've ever allocated before to preventing homelessness, as well as assisting those programs for individuals who are in shelters. We're giving more flexibility to people who are in state and federally subsidized housing to give them more flexibility as far as how much income they can make. I think that this is definitely a step in the right direction. Massachusetts has led the way and has been that domino that fell in so many different issues, whether it be public education, whether it be health care. And I truly think that the opioid epidemic, which we've led the nation in, as far as seeing some drops, which we've recently seen some more progress on, this is one of the things that we should really care about, because it's one thing that I think that if we really comprehended as a society, put our heads around and figured out some of the small intricacies of how to really get to the nuts and bolts of this, it's something that we can make a huge impact on. I don't know if, you know, it's sort of pie in the sky to think we'll ever completely end it entirely, but I think that we can help a lot of people that we're not helping right now.
Again, you're listening to 95.9 WATD in Marshfield, a Monday Night Talk, and our guest is State Senator Patrick O'Connor, who, you know, he's a busy guy, but is kind enough to stop in and chat about some of the things that he's working on. Now, I'm privileged enough to see some of the things that you do with some of the colleagues that you're working with here on the South Shore. I'm also a pet owner. I have two dogs that I love. We have two dogs that we adopted from Forever Homes. You provided Forever Homes, but did it through an agency. And I believe that you're working on, you've been working on legislation in regards to puppy mills. Is this really a problem?
It is. So the problem lies right now with the pet shops, that's basically a outlet right now that is still being supplied puppies and kittens from mass producers down south. And so what happens is these facilities down in Arkansas, Mississippi, Kansas, that region are mass producing puppies. They're abiding by USDA regulations, but USDA regulations are completely inadequate. It's basically you can have as many litters as you possibly can, as far as from the female dog. There's no regulation on how much sunlight they're supposed to have, no regulation on vocalization as far as a socialization, excuse me, no regulation on where they should live. They can be in cages. So these areas are essentially what you see when you see those really horrendous stories from the Humane Society about cracking down and cutting down on these facilities. However, they abide by USDA regulations, because USDA regulations covers all 50 states. But in Massachusetts, we have a higher standard, and we believe we should end the supply and demand chain that's currently going on with the pet shops that exist in the Commonwealth. There's probably about 10 pet shops that exist right now. It fluctuates between 10 and 12, and some have closed, some have opened, but those stores right there, our bill would basically say, you have to cut off your business with these puppy mills. You have to stop this supply chain that you're getting from down south. If families knew the way in which the puppy that they just purchased for thousands of dollars had been treated, had been shipped up in crates with 70, 80 other dogs, if they knew the abuse that some of these dogs may have gone through, or that these dogs This, you know, these dogs' mothers were bred out until basically their end of life. Mm-hmm. I think that they would have a different opinion on purchasing that dog. And so what we're saying is we have so many dogs right now in rescue, so many dogs in shelters right now. Let's start the relationship between the pet shops and these organizations and merge these two and allow for these pet stores to be basically huge adoption centers.
Indeed. This particular show, we are great friends with the Animal Protection Center of Southeastern Mass. They actually came into existence when the MSPCA could no longer afford to have a building, a brick and mortar, and a group of folks came in, volunteers, set up a nonprofit, and they help pets find a home. The folks can't have a dog or a cat, whatever, you name the animal. But I think it's tremendous. That would be a win-win where you're helping shelters that may be taking in these animals that don't have a home and then working, we don't want to put a pet store out of business, but let's do it where there is a partnership. I think it's fantastic. Do you feel, though, that have you heard any of the conversations between the pet stores and the shelters, and what are you hearing?
We've had the pet stores in. Obviously, they're in opposition to this bill, but when you look at the numbers, the sale of actual live pets only makes up 3% of what is a multi-billion dollar industry. Mm-hmm. And this is actually, this ban has been put in place in Boston. It's been put in place in areas in California. And what we've seen is actually these pet shops completely reform themselves, where they no longer sell dogs and animals from mills, and what they've done is they've becoming areas where they do grooming, areas where they do sort of like doggy daycare, areas where they sell supplies or that they provide veterinary care. You know, they're able to transform their business to adapt. And then what you have is you have goodwill from individuals who are seeing now that they're offering these animals up for adoption. And that's something that I think that they don't even know, that there's a market out there of people who are highly educated pet owners, mm-hmm. that are saying, I'm never going to step foot into a pet store because I know exactly what they're doing and where they're getting those animals from, and I disagree with it. If they change their business model and open it up to dogs and cats that are being put up for adoption, I think that they open themselves up to a whole new market, and they're able to do all the things that the 97% of their market share that they're not going after right now are making a fortune on. And you look at the top 20 pet stores in the entire country, and only one of them sells live animals.
You just got a few more minutes left here with me. I'll ask one last follow-up question in this area, and then we can move on to our final topic while we have you here. We're here with the State Senator Patrick O'Connor, who's kind enough to kind of hang out with us here. When you were talking about where's the legislation at this particular moment, has it been well received by your colleagues, or is this something that's in committee? Where does this legislation stand for it to move on to be a law?
It's in committee right now. It's the bill that I sponsored that has the most co-sponsors of all the bills that Fantastic. I filed this year. We filed 136 bills, which was the second most in the legislature, which I'm proud of, because a lot of the bills that we get actually come from constituents right here in the district that say, hey, how come government isn't doing this, or this happened to my family, or just different stories of what can we do to make government more efficient and better. And I love hearing these stories because it's important, even though some of these stories are incredibly tragic. But we have a lot of momentum with this bill in particular, and I think that this is going to be something that we're going to have a real conversation on, because, as I said, Boston has banned it. Some other areas have as well, and I think it's time that we move on from pet shops and we change the model that we no longer allow them to use dogs from areas that we wouldn't go down to Arkansas and go to a facility that's overbreeding dogs and say, oh, I'd love to purchase a dog from there. So why go into a strip mall or a shopping center and see these dogs in these fish tanks and decide, oh, I want to adopt that one, or excuse me, I want to purchase that one. It just wouldn't happen regularly, and it's kind of masking a real problem that we have inside of our country, which is the overbreeding of dogs in particular from areas that really don't care about the well-being of that animal and don't care about the consumer protection component of once they send that animal up to Massachusetts, you know, it may be riddled with disease, it may have behavioral issues, but they don't care because they're sole business is just overbreeding these dogs.
Talk to me about this other piece of legislation about an individual who was in it, who was disabled, who was in a group home. Tommy's bill. Where is Tommy's bill? What is Tommy's bill about for folks who don't know? Because I know that's something that happened right up in Norwell, correct?
It happened in Norwell, and the family is from Duxbury and from Braintree. Mm-hmm. This was a situation where Tommy's mother, Maureen, came to us and explained the entire story of Tommy being in a group home. He had a seizure monitor that was provided for him. And he spent about 3 weeks in the hospital for what was determined to be migraine headaches. And upon discharge, he went back to his group home in Norwell, and he tragically passed away. And the situation after some research was done was that the monitor had actually run out of batteries. And we thought that this was completely avoidable. So when we looked into seeing what the state does right now, when you have an individual who's in a hospital and they're discharged back to a group home, there's not a lot in place as far as what the communication that needs to happen. And what we're trying to do is open up that line of communication so that one healthcare professional at the end of the hospital is talking to another healthcare professional, and in particular, a healthcare professional at the other end, and that healthcare professional at that group home informs all the residents on how to keep up with the equipment, how to maintain the equipment, how to fix the equipment, when the equipment needs to be recharged or new batteries need to be put in. Just very simple, basic stuff that specifically goes to individuals who have disabilities, and in particular, who also rely on life-saving equipment for their day-to-day. And this is something that I think, when we've talked about it to other colleagues, have said we can't believe this is something that's not in place, and that we also can't believe how easy this could be, is to just basically open up a line of communication. You'd think that it's happening already, and I'm sure in many resident group homes it is happening right now, but unfortunately for this family, it didn't happen. And that communication, if it had happened, could have avoided a major tragedy and something that really broke up and tore that family apart. And what we want to do is put this bill in place in Tommy's memory to make sure that individuals with disabilities who are on life-saving equipment have the people looking out for them that they need. And in these residential group homes, it's tough to staff these places now. So in some areas, it's a revolving door. So you might have somebody one day that's not there next week, and then a new person, and then they last a month. Yeah. It's just the way that human services...
And the message isn't necessarily carrying on to the new people.
Correct. Yeah. And this is this is obviously a very tragic case of why it's important, yes, to continue that line of communication, to make sure that everyone is aware of all of the equipment that our most vulnerable population, those individuals with disabilities, have at these group homes that are funded in large part by the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. So I consider them under the care of the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. This communication needs to happen because it can literally save lives.
Well, we've just basically run out of time. Anything you want to say quickly in closing, whether it's how folks can reach you or anything else maybe we forgot to mention while we're sitting here chatting?
Yeah, this year was great. This year's budget has been really something to be proud of. The Commonwealth of Massachusetts from last year will probably end up about $1 billion above, with a $1 billion surplus. This year, we've increased funding to education, to healthcare, to services for our veterans, for our disabled, for our senior citizens, for those who are in very vulnerable populations of our Commonwealth. This is something that we can all be proud of, and it's because of a large amount of work of the people on the South Shore, really driving this economy. So, privileged and honored to be able to be in this position to go up to Beacon Hill and take a vote on behalf of the folks down here. And if there's ever anything you need, my number up at the State House is 617-722-1646. We have a staff of 4 people up there that are willing and ready to work at a moment's notice on any issue, whether it be something that you think you should see in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts legislatively, or if you have a personal problem or a personal opinion on an issue, please give me a call.
Very attentive staff, and I'm speaking from experience. Anytime I've called, even to this recent connection where I mentioned Anthony, but there were a couple other people who answered the phone and put me in touch. Anthony was basically the point person. But keep up the great work, and we look forward to having you back in sometime during the fall.
Thanks, Kevin. Anytime. Thank you.
All right. That's it for the first hour of Monday Night Talk. We're going to step aside, and when we come back, more Monday Night Talk. Don't go anywhere.
South Shore's breaking news, weather, and traffic station.
95.9 WATD FM Marshfield and 95.9 WATD.com. This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD.
The new patio at McGuigan's offers alfresco dining in downtown Whitman. Seafood lovers will love the shrimp scampi, lobster leg tacos, and fish tacos. If you prefer something meatier, the patio's braised short rib dinner and 14-ounce pork chops are customer favorites. Into the latest food trends? Try the patio's Beyond Burger and flatbread pizza. The patio has 7 55-inch TVs and a 9-foot video wall, making it the perfect place to eat, drink, and socialize. And don't forget McGuigan's Pub next door. They're located at 546 and 552 Washington Street in Whitman.
I'm Tiny of Tiny Sons Glass. If you're driving along right now and you've got an angry little ding in your windshield,
ouch!
But good news, we can fix that ding. We'll fix that ding before it spreads. Drive on over to Tiny & Sons, Route 53 Pembroke. We will fix that ding. Your insurance company will pay.
And that's why I sing, gimme that ding.
So gimme that ding. Tiny & Sons Glass will fix that ding. Insurance company will pay.
That's right.
My dad did a great job. 1-888-64-TINYS. Just call.
This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
Hey, hour number two. We've got Mike Joshua coming up later this hour. Laura Fitzgerald Kemet, Hanson Board of Selectmen. But first, Richard, we're going to talk a little bit about the alternative meat industry. And this is perfect for you, knowing that you offer alternative meat at your restaurant. And knowing that our guest who is on the phone right now, Mr. Stanley Chase III, founder of Louisville's Vegan Jerky, is joining us to talk a little bit about the alternative meat industry. Stanley, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks a lot for having me on.
You got it. So how did you, if you could first tell us a little bit about your company, how did it come to be?
Yeah, well, I started the company in 2012, sort of on an accident. I had a vegan food truck at the time, but I was experimenting with other things throughout that period. And I, the story goes that I was making a Korean pulled pork, but I was trying to make it vegan. So I was using a protein made out of soy. And I marinated the protein and I put it in the oven and I didn't set a timer. And I forgot about it. And I smelled it burning, so I ran in and took it out of the oven. And I sat it on the counter to cool off before I threw it away because I burnt the heck out of it. And my roommate came in like 20 minutes later and was like, "Hey man, what's this jerky? Did you make jerky?" And I was like, "What? No." And he's like, "Well, that tastes like jerky in there." So I went in and tried it, and I was like, "Wow, you're right. This tastes just like jerky." So I bagged it up and took it to a bar, and I was passing it out to people, and everybody started asking where they could buy it. So that's pretty much how it started.
And it's growing for you. Business, from what I understand, is you offer a number of flavors, including smoked black pepper, smoked chipotle, and perfect pepperoni?
Yeah. Yeah, we have 5 flavors. We also have a chipotle and a barbecue. And we just went Whole Foods National last July of 2018. So we're pretty much all over the country now. We're in a lot of mom-and-pop stores, co-ops, and, you know, we're even getting into gas stations and things like that. So
quite the success story.
Yeah, I mean, really unexpected. I didn't have any background in business, so I've been doing this really independently for a long time. Had a couple of mentors along the way, but yeah, it's been, especially over the last year, I'm sure you guys have seen, this category is growing pretty quickly.
Yeah, me and Richard would like to know why do you think the plant-based food market is growing so rapidly? Do you have a couple of reasons why that's happening?
Yeah. I mean, from my perspective, when I started the company, it was very, very niche. Like, we, you know, weren't really selling a lot to the flexitarian or meat eaters. Mostly it was the small pocket of vegetarians and vegans in the country. But as time has gone on, we have just collectively seen a lot of people going the meat alternative route for several reasons, being health reasons, environmental impact, animal welfare. You know, so there's just a lot of different, even religious reasons. I hear stories all the time from different people, you know, whether they are still continuing to eat meat, but they're eating less meat, or if they've just completely given it up. You know, a lot of this, with the forest fires happening right now, there's just a lot of discussion happening all over the world about the meat intake. So, yeah, I mean, I think that's pretty much like the cocktail of reasons.
Richard, do you have a follow-up question?
Yeah. Hi, Stanley. This is Richard. How you
doing?
Hey,
Richard.
So, I actually own a restaurant, and we serve the Beyond Burger. And
cool.
I opened a restaurant almost 10 years ago, and, you know, 10 years ago, that wasn't even an alternative. And now we're opening this new one several months ago, and we have the purveyors trying to sell us the Impossible Burger or the Beyond Burger. And
right.
We actually now sell the Beyond Burger, and I find it amazing the amount of Beyond Burgers that we sell. And people had never tried it before. I mean, it's the latest rage, and it's what everybody's hearing and talking about. I mean, and you see these stocks that are going through the roof of Beyond Burger
right.
and these other companies. It's to me, it's amazing. And people love it. And I just find it amazing that a plant-based burger is selling the way that it's selling. But it's crazy. People love it.
Yeah, and I think that something that is a little bit or at play here is that I think people's expectations of veggie-based products such as the burger and the Beyond Burger, the Impossible Burger, their expectations are about as low as they can get. Most people are expecting to bite into something that's textured like tofu or something that's textured like a veggie burger or... I don't know, something mushy. They're not expecting the texture to be there. And I think it's really shocking a lot of people. And the plant-based food world is a lot, it's a lot of it is technology-driven. So just like the iPhone or just like other tech categories, these things are getting better every single year. And probably the Beyond Burger that you're using in your restaurant is the 2.0. So, you know, it's improved since last year's. And the Impossible Burger just put out their 2.0 as well. And they said they have every intention of next year putting out a 3.0. So, you know, I think the technology is just going to keep getting better and better, and it's going to start getting realer and realer.
You know, it's funny that you say that because a great number of people that try it talk about the texture, and they did not expect what it was going to be.
Right.
I think it's great. I mean, we're killing it with the Beyond Burger. Only because I think that my chef and we were going to do the Impossible Burger only to be told by the purveyor we couldn't get it because the demand was so high they couldn't stock it.
There's a shortage. Yeah. Yeah.
So can you tell us what some of the ingredients of your food is, or is that no?
Yeah, I mean, our jerky is very transparent. That's one of the things that I did in the beginning, knowing what I was trying to do, which was get into chains like Whole Foods. They have a pretty big list of ingredients that are banned from the grocery store, and most jerky has a couple of preservatives in them, like sodium bisulfite and a couple other. Those are usually found in almost every jerky. So we started with really as minimal ingredients as possible. The actual jerky protein is 100% soybean. So there's nothing else in it. It is extruded soy. So a lot of people have the exact same experience that they have with the Beyond or Impossible. I've even been at food trade shows parked next to all the deer jerky guys and the beef jerky guys and bison. And when I first show up, they're all kind of side-eyeing me. And as the day goes on, they usually come over. And I had one time here in Kentucky where a bunch of them came over very skeptical and I think kind of ready to, you know, joke on it. And I just offered them a sample. And at first, most of them were like, no, I'm good. And then I just said, well, at least, you know, you guys could make fun of it after you tried it. So they took a bite, and before I knew it, they had all their friends coming over, and they were inviting everybody over to try it, and they were all just, like, blown away by the texture because they weren't expecting there to be a jerky, like, chew to a soybean, you know?
Yeah, we're speaking with Stanley Chase, founder of Louisville's Vegan Jerky, talking about alternative meat, and they're saying that this could become a $140 billion industry in about a decade. That's what Barclays is predicting at this particular time. I think the thing I want to ask you, Stanley, is we look at companies like Subway and what's been advertised recently is Burger King rolling out a meat alternative burger. Do you think that this is the mainstreaming of vegetarian and vegan lifestyles?
Yes, and I think that there are a lot of people that maybe, especially like health-based people or health-conscious people and vegans, vegetarians, that are a little, this isn't really their market, but I don't think that the fast food market that's bringing in these products is really geared towards them. I think that what it's doing very successfully is starting to wean off people that are, again, maybe not ready to cut meat out of their diet completely, but hey, 1 or 2 days a week, you know, they get on their lunch break and they order an Impossible Burger as opposed to a traditional Whopper. And these are all little examples of how people can participate in lessening the, you know, the meat intake that's happening now that is not sustainable. And, you know, I do think that in the future, over the next, especially the next 10 years, this is going to change rapidly.
You know, it's interesting. My, you know, I've experienced some weight loss over the past 6 months, and a part of it was cutting out red meat and almost living a flexitarian lifestyle between eating chicken or maybe fish and just sticking to a plant-based diet. And it was going to Richard's restaurant and trying the Beyond Burger that we're like, oh my God, this is fantastic. This is, yeah, this is the wave of the future. We're sitting here talking about, you know, these ingredients. What do you feel is going to be, what industry is going to experience the greatest negative impact from the growth of plant-based foods?
I don't know. I mean, this is a heavy conversation. There was even a big CNN debate. There's a lot of the cattle ranchers are starting to basically try to put a wedge in the growth of the plant-based food market while they find their footing. So they're arguing legislation across the country based on terminology. So you can't use the word pork or bacon or even in some cases burger. They don't want any meat words being used on these plant-based foods. So, you know, I think that, but as you see, Tyson is putting out their own fake chicken or their alternative chicken this year. So there are a lot of these companies that are, they want to be involved. But that the entire scope of business is changing as we know it. Companies like mine wouldn't have really been able to exist before the internet. We sell a lot to direct to customer, a lot of word of mouth spreads through the internet. So there are a lot of independent companies like mine that are being swallowed up by a lot of big guys because instead of them doing their own internal R&D, they're just taking these companies that have been doing it for a while and know what they're doing, and they're just investing in them. We've had a lot of different offers from big companies as far as coming in to help us scale. But we haven't taken any of those offers, and we're not really interested in it at this point. But I don't know. I think there's going to be a lot of the big major meat companies are going to try to get into this world quickly.
Is there any concern that this could be just a fad and this as quick as it has grown is as quick as it could go away? Or do you see that there's long-term success and future in alternative meats? Can I say that or am I going to have to worry about a dairy farmer getting upset at me?
Well, not yet. I mean, maybe one day. I get asked this question all the time, and I've been talking about this even with my dad since like the 2008, 2009 time. It has felt like it could be a fad for a while. It's felt that it could be a small group of people that want these products. But I don't know if I don't believe that you can turn this train around or to stop it. It's moving quickly. It's heading in the direction, in my opinion, of electric cars and wind power and solar power. It just seems like a more sustainable, viable option. And again, there are numerous amounts of reasons that people are stopping their meat intake or lowering it. And I don't think that those reasons are going anywhere either, whether it's health or environmental or just simply the factory farm industry that's pretty out of control and has been for a long time.
Richard?
You know, it's funny because you see new products and new gimmicks and new things come along, and you can say or you can pick out that will be a fad. I'm looking at this saying, this is not a fad. This is here to stay.
Mm.
And this is changing the way that some people eat. And I mean, they look for this and other vegetarian type things.
Yeah, like dairy products, and plant-based dairy products.
I see it every day now. I don't see this as a fad. I see this as something that's here to stay because people love it.
Well, can I also say that the millennials and the Gen Z, or whatever you want to call them, my goodness, like I own a restaurant as well here in Louisville, and it's an all-vegan restaurant, and we do a bunch of fast food mock stuff. So we have like a Farby's instead of an Arby's. It's an Arby's roast beef and cheddar that's all vegan. We do a numerous amounts of fake meat meals from fast food restaurants, and I mean, the customers are 15 to 25 year old customers are just, they just flood our restaurant. And it's the same with our jerky. You know, so this is also a very big generational thing.
If folks want to find out more about Louisville's vegan jerky or more about your company, how can they do that?
Easiest way, the website is LVJCO, so it's just Louisville Vegan Jerky Co. But you can just Google Louisville Vegan Jerky and you'll see tons of hits. If you go to our website, we have a store locator. You can most likely find our jerky within 5 miles of anywhere that you're at. And we also sell on Amazon and on our website directly. On our website, we have a bunch of small batch flavors. So for the the curious foodies, they can get on there and try some like really fun flavors that we have. But yeah, Whole Foods is definitely the easiest place to find us.
Well, we thank you, Stanley, for joining us for the conversation, and maybe we can have you back on in a couple of months and revisit the discussion see where things are going, especially with, like I said earlier, companies like Burger King rolling out advertising campaigns, you know, pushing a Beyond Burger or something that is a plant-based meal. Definitely Great. Would like to have you back on.
Yeah, I would love to. Thank you so much for having me.
Excellent. Thank you so much for joining us.
Good luck.
All right, there he is, Stanley Chase III, the founder of Louisville's Vegan Jerky. And as we found out, he has a restaurant as well. It's pretty cool.
You need to clarify how you were introduced to it, by the way.
I did. I said that.
No,
you
said you had it.
Oh, I was introduced by having it at Richard's, the patio at McGuigan's.
But who ordered it?
Oh, my missus.
Yeah, all right. So you're forgetting the part of the story that you didn't actually order it. You finished your meal. And then ate half of hers.
No, I said, let me try to play. That's all. I think all gentlemen do that.
I don't want to be lifting the curtain here in Radio Land, but I think the whole story needs to be told.
Okay. Do you need me to confess to our next guest, who is actually waiting on the line? We have joining us right now, the chairman of the Hanson Board of Selectmen, Laura Fitzgerald Kemet. Laura, welcome. Welcome back to Monday Night Talk.
Thanks, Kevin. Hi, Rich.
How are you?
Good, how are you?
Good, thank you.
So do we make you hungry while you're waiting on the line?
Well, I am, I guess I'm a flexitarian or whatever, but I do mostly eat plant-based and fish, And I got to tell you, I love the patio because they've got the Brussels sprouts and they've got the cauliflower, which is always checks boxes for me as appetizers, which is awesome. But I have not had vegan jerky. I have to say, I will have to take that under advisement.
See, what I might have to do is maybe get like an Amazon shipment when we have you on later on next month. You sit in on the show, and maybe we do like a sampling.
Right. What could possibly go wrong with that, Kevin?
What could possibly? Well, here's the one thing: is if we're making sour faces, what's really good is it's radio. Nobody will see it.
Okay.
But that's not why we have you on. We have you on just to kind of just to check in and say hello. And I know that one of the conversations that you and I wanted to have was about some of the things that are going on in the town of Hanson. Knowing that there are a lot of different things that are being worked on by the Board of Selectmen, that recently there was a conversation about some of the goals that were set, and you guys did a little bit of a check-in a week ago to at least see where things are. What would you say are some of the top things that are on the list of things to do, or the things that the board's trying to be attentive to in the town of Hanson?
Well, without a doubt, job number one is to get a town administrator. We have the lovely and talented Mary Marini, who has graciously agreed to stay. She's ending a 30-year career in Hanson, and being the kind of person that she is, when things went awry, she volunteered to stay and help us see things through until we could get her replacement in place, which we've done, and that person will be starting shortly after Labor Day, and then the town administrator replacement in place, which based on our discussion with our research firm, with the firm that we're going to be using, the consulting research firm that we're using, looks like it could happen by December 1st or right at least by the beginning of the year, and that fits in kind of closely to what Mary was hoping, but she's graciously agreed to stay until everybody's settled in. So that's job number one, because we need to have a consistent high performer in that role that's going to help the Board of Selectmen see its goals through. So that's, I'd say, the number one. And then, you know, it depends on the day, on the priorities of some of the other items, but for sure, getting the revitalization of Main Street, or maybe even the vitalization of Main Street, depending upon how you look at it, right along where the railroad track is and right where the railroad station is, that area. We've designated that as an economic target area through the state, which affords us the ability to, as a town, work with some of the business owners in that area and leverage low-cost or zero-cost loans and perhaps grants, depending upon what the project is, to incentivize businesses and owners to locate there, perhaps build housing. And again, we're not talking about, a five-story apartment buildings or anything of that sort. We're talking about businesses and housing that are compatible to the town of Hanson. And I think we all know that that's not going to be a five-story building. Those would be probably the top two. And then, of course, the use of McQuan School, whether we're going to tear that down or whether we're going to be able to leverage the relationships that Keller Williams has got in their commercial and industrial division and perhaps getting somebody there to reuse McQuan for senior housing. So those are, I'd say, the top three.
Richard?
I'm curious of, and I think I've lost touch of, what was happening at the old Plymouth County Hospital site.
Oh, well, that's still on there, and thanks for bringing that up, Richard. What's happening is a couple years ago we got funding through town meeting to clean that footprint up. So now and on that particular footprint, what we've got is the food pantry in front. We've got a house that's under the care and conservation of the Historic Society, which they're trying to revitalize, the Bonney House, and a community garden. But in the back portion where the Plymouth County Hospital, the actual hospital facility itself, was located, it is a clean footprint. It has We've had all of the asbestos and all of that material removed, and now it is essentially an open field surrounded by trees. And we've got a committee that's been working extremely hard, extremely diligently, meeting literally every week and sometimes more often than that. And they've done some community outreach. We've had some sessions where everybody was invited to sort of kind of come, stakeholders and then citizens at large, to come and give their thoughts for how they'd like to see that property used. It was an extremely fruitful exercise. And out of that, we had the Conway School with up at UMass Amherst render some very rough drawings of various options of what that property could be used for. And then people kind of voted on what they would like of those three or four options that they presented. And it's going to be a combination probably of perhaps a sports field or two, but not all sports fields, but perhaps some portion of it. But primarily, it's going to be a park. Now, what that park looks like, we don't know yet. This most recent town meeting had funded a consultant to help them drill down a little bit further for, you know, a little more detail on what that would look like. Unfortunately, it was a false start with that consultant, and they've had to restart again. But they are plugging away, and I had been hopeful that we would have an article up at the October town meeting for some funding to move the ball forward a little bit. But they're just not quite there, but they're pretty close, and I feel pretty bullish about the fact they'll have something on the May town warrant.
So housing is off the table for that site?
Housing is off the table for that site, and that has been a rampant rumor that we've heard. And the reason that housing is off of the table is several reasons. First of all, we know about the ill-fated Barron Partners project, and one of the reasons that that was ill-fated was because of the soil conditions up there are just not particularly conducive to putting a septic up there. And if you did, and this is sort of what was the undoing of the whole Barron Partners deal, if you put something up there, it's extremely costly. And as you know, being in real estate, you know, so you've got to run the numbers, and you run the numbers and you say, I'm not going to make any money if I have to put this much money into the septic, or I'm not going to make the profit margin I need to even make it worth doing this. So for that reason, and then we've got an overwhelming response from taxpayers and from people in town that that's not how they want that property used. They want it to be used for some kind of a community gathering point. You know, unlike Whitman, which has got your lovely town park, which I know you guys have got a lot of people dedicated to keeping going, Hanson really doesn't have anything like that. We don't have that community, you know, some kind of a community place where people could gather and organically meet each other, maybe walk their dogs, that type of thing. And so I think that's the vision that, you know, the majority, of course, you're never going to have everybody on board with something, but the majority of folks have for that Plymouth County Hospital. So it'll be exciting to see how it finally comes to fruition, but it will be something along those lines.
You know, it's a perfect location, and it's a beautiful piece of property for a community use. I think that, you know, as a real estate developer, I think that is a great idea. For the community, because we do have the park in Whitman, and it's spectacular. There's so many things that you could do with that site for the community. It's, you know, it's endless.
Oh, agreed. I mean, you know, we've got people have said, you know, we could have concerts, maybe we could have some kind of a, you know, little, you know, some type of a shelter so that people could sit and, you know, not get rained out. We've had people say, geez, we could have, you know, pop-up bear gardens. I mean, the list has been endless, and it's exciting to even have that prospect because we haven't had it before. And thanks to the town funding the cleanup, now we've got all of these potential uses in front of us.
Probably the last thing I'll ask you, and this is I'm checking off a couple of boxes, not only on the collective list for the Board of Selectmen, but also some off of Laura Fitzgerald Kemet's suggested goals as well. And then that is outreach to residents in multiple ways, whether it's just general outreach or even educating them when it comes to how the town meeting process goes.
Yeah, so one of the things that I think is really important is we've got to meet people where they are, and we've done a pretty poor job of doing that in terms of getting information out. And I'm not laying blame anywhere. Some of it's the shifting, you know, demographics and the change in ways that people communicate and get their information. And, you know, and as you guys both know, government moves at a glacial pace. So we haven't necessarily kept pace with that as a government entity. So one of the things we're looking at is things like using, you know, some of your shows, Kevin, to get the message out, getting a more dynamic website, getting a Facebook page, but perhaps not allowing commenting for obvious reasons, or limiting commenting, you know,
none
Twitter.
Would be better.
That type of thing. So, you know, really, because what happens is, you know, we get to town meeting, and it's just so depressing, you know, that every town meeting, just about, unless there's something particularly controversial or, you know, a big budget item, we get there and we're struggling to make the quorum. And I just have to believe that the better informed people are, the more engaged they're going to be, and the more they're going to say, hell no, I'm not going to let somebody else make these decisions for me. I want to be there. I want to be at town meeting because I understand the process and I understand what's going on. So, you know, it's a universal goal that the board has got, and we're really working hard to make it happen, although the, you know, our success is not apparent at this point. It should be soon, and, you know, it's something we keep plugging away on.
How often are you going to be doing status updates on these goals and giving folks an idea as to where things stand with some of these initiatives?
Well, I think organically it's just going to happen at each meeting, you know, as we sort of, you know, we're moving forward but I think more formally at least every 6 months. You know, I just think that it's important to have goals and tweak the goals, reset the goals, figure out if they're even still valid, if anybody even cares about these things, because periodically they'll get stale and you have to kind of take a look at, you know, take the pulse and figure out whether that's still important. So at least every 6 months to keep ourselves honest and more often as necessary.
It will definitely, like I said, we'll have you on in September and we'll talk about this and more, have you sit in on the show, and maybe we'll even talk a little bit about the 200th anniversary celebration happening in town too.
That would be fabulous. And thanks, guys. Great show, and I appreciate you having me on.
Excellent. This is Laura Fitzgerald Kemet, chair of the Hanson Board of Selectmen. Going to do right now is we are going to step aside and on deck, your final segment of the evening. My Joshua coming in studio in just a few moments here on 95.9 WATD. You're listening to Monday Night Talk.
Is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD.
The new patio at McGuigan's offers alfresco dining in downtown Whitman. Seafood lovers will love the shrimp scampi, lobster leg tacos, and fish tacos. If you prefer something meatier, the patio's braised short rib dinner and 14-ounce pork chops are customer favorites. Into the latest food trends? Try the patio's Beyond Burger and flatbread pizza. The patio has 7 55-inch TVs and a 9-foot video wall, making it the perfect place to eat, drink, and socialize. And don't forget McGuigan's Pub next door. They're located at 546 and 552 Washington Street in Whitman.
I'm Tiny of Tiny & Sons Glass. My boys do a good job. Here's why. When they were kids, every summer we'd go to the automotive graveyard and take cars apart. Windshields, transmissions, generators. Then comes the fun part, putting it all back together. It was summer camp at the junkyard, and it worked. They're good boys. You can trust them.
My dad did a great job. 1-888-64-TINIES. Just call.
Download the Monday Night Talk podcast from iTunes for free. Just search for Monday Night Talk WATD. We now return to Kevin Tachi and Monday Night Talk.
Of course, that's obviously for my guest. Crazy. They're applauding him almost, what, 2.5 hours early. My gosh.
That's how I like it.
The Americanorama, Midnight Bong. Yes. Also, the executive director of Plymouth Rocks Events.
Absolutely.
How are you, sir?
Good. Thanks for having me yet again.
How's your summer been?
Fast. Like, suddenly it's kids are going back to school Wednesday, and what happened?
I don't know. They're talking about hurricanes, and...
That's crazy.
But this is the last Monday of the summer.
I like the fall, though. So I'm fine with the fall, but I don't know. Between the heat and the mosquitoes, I just feel like I could barely be outside. And now it's over, almost.
It is what it is, my friend. But, you know, it's cyclical with the mosquitoes. It is. It's, you know, with the whole Triple E threat, you know, we go a couple of years, we don't have to worry about it, and then, you know, we get warnings, and they're getting positive tests in Halifax.
So 2023, I'll mark it down, they're coming back.
You should. You should. Hopefully, it'll be a decline, and hopefully nobody else will be affected.
Yes.
But we have you in because there's a couple of great events that are coming up, and also, of course, to... promote your fantastic show. I think you got a great interview on tap this week.
No, actually, I ran it. I ran it Thursday night.
I missed it.
With Denny Lane of Wings.
Love Wings.
It was, it was awesome. I was kind of like, oh my God, I'm talking to Denny Lane.
You checked that box, though.
Checked that box, and then we saw the show at the Spire on Friday night. He was awesome, just solo acoustic, telling stories, and, you know, kept saying, like, that's Denny, that's the guy. That's him right there. He only worked with Paul McCartney for like 7 years or something.
So, you say like it's a bad
thing. No big deal.
No big deal.
But no,
he was like the second wife to the Beatles, so to speak. You know, being in Wings and a great time. Again, big fan of Paul McCartney and
oh yeah,
Wings. So how can you go wrong?
But no, it was great.
You know, talk to me about the venue that is the Spire Center.
So the Spire Center in Plymouth is...
I've never been.
Oh, you have to go there.
Never been.
It's a fantastic refurbished old church that does all kinds of shows, but a ton of concerts, and the acoustics are fantastic. The pews are the seats. They have a bar there. They have a little, you know, lobby area. Then you go in for the show. They do about 250 to 275 people. So it's very intimate. And yeah, that's where we just saw Denny Lane. And that's where we have a fantastic show coming up Sunday, September the 15th, for my Plymouth Rocks Events Americana-rama live show.
Concert series.
A concert series. Well, there's
How's
one
feel
anyway.
To say the concert series. And it's got your name on it.
Feels pretty good. So yeah, so WATD, obviously, you know, giving it the go ahead to bring Americana-rama. Live to do a show down at the Spire Center. So very excited for that with Julie Rhodes. Julie was the Americana Artist of the Year Boston Music Awards. And she's great. I play her a lot on my show. You can hear her here and there during the day on WATD. I now have an Americana-rama Song of the Day.
I think that's amazing.
Which is a lot of fun.
I get a lot of love for John Shea, but he's got to move over a bit for other radio personalities like yourself. Love what he does. I really do, John, if you're listening. We actually, you know what's odd? John was on here last week. We were talking with John and talking all about Almost Famous, and I asked him, when will the day come when you can remove the almost?
The almost.
Because he's had enough famous people on the show. We played a few of their cuts.
It's always almost, though. That's what makes it fresh. Then they go to famous, and then they go somewhere else. Then they come on my show. I don't know.
But no, he's had that niche where he has the song. I love it. When I heard it the other day, I'm like, oh my God, this is great.
Right. Yes.
Yeah, I'm a fan of yours. I'm a fan of what you do, not awesome. Only as a radio personality, but other things we've talked before about. But this is fantastic with the whole Plymouth Rocks events and yep. what it does. And now, you know, you have a concert series. Who does Julie Rhodes draw comparison to?
Ooh, let's
Somebody
see.
Somebody has never heard.
I would say she's got like this soul, old time, like 60s soul feeling to her. So, you know, I'd say almost like a young Aretha Franklin, which I know you can't, you know, compare anybody to like Aretha Franklin, but she's coming on. She just played Newport Folk Festival.
Fantastic.
She recorded her first record down at Muscle Shoals Studios, a portion of it down in Alabama. So she has this amazing cred and this amazing voice and a great band. And Sunday, September the 15th, 5 o'clock matinee show. So if you're thinking, oh, Sunday, I can't stay out late, we've already thought about that. That's where we're going to do a 5 o'clock show, wrap it all up by like 7, and you still get home and get ready for Monday.
See, here's the smart thing that people can do. Plymouth. I don't know, last time you folks have, any of you who are listening right now, get the radio dial here on 95.9 WATD with the great Mike Joshua. A couple of weeks ago, I was hanging out. Actually saw Lennon and Friends. It's like a Russian...
Chicago tribute band.
Yes.
I heard they were great.
And me... Yeah, I got video on my phone. I'll show you later. But me and the missus spent the afternoon just bebopping around...
Plymouth.
Just the hustle and the bustle of downtown Plymouth. Amazing.
Awesome.
Taking the day.
Yep, absolutely.
Grab something to eat. There's plenty of eateries. Go down to the waterfront. Grab yourself a cone.
Wrap it up with a show at 5 o'clock.
Boom.
Nope, it's the perfect pre-fall evening, Sunday, September 15th. Tickets at PlymouthRocksEvents.org. And proceeds from that benefit Plymouth Rocks. And what we do is we split our proceeds with local school music programs. Last fall, right around this time, we started a scholarship in Plymouth Public Schools to help kids that can't afford private music lessons get them. So what we hope to do on this weekend, that we have a couple shows, is to keep feeding that scholarship and help more local kids.
Now, maybe Julie Rhodes isn't your thing. Although, according to the press release here, is she has been recognized by the Boston Music Awards. Mm-hmm. I believe she was their Americana Artist of the Year,
yep.
2017.
Absolutely.
Also was in the Improper Bostonian.
Yep, they love her.
So, I mean, she's got great recognition here. Maybe that's not for you. I'm hoping maybe you might want to take a weekend and hang out in Plymouth Center, because...
Yeah, that's for the adults.
That's for the adults.
And then...
Get into the kiddie car.
The day before.
The Imagination Movers.
Movers.
Yep. The Emmy-winning kids band.
Yep.
They returning.
Returning, yep. We did our first show last year with them. It went off very well, so we said, let's bring them back again. Nothing like having 500 kids going crazy at Memorial Hall. So Imagination Movers, they used to be on the Disney Channel. That's where they won their Emmy Awards from. They just do a fantastic interactive show with kids from, you know, 4 to 12. If you're an older sibling being dragged along, you know, with the family, rolling your eyes, I guarantee you'll be up and dancing and, you know, having fun with them. They're just, it's not like a, you know, like a little kids band. It's a really fun, interactive family group. And that's the day before, Saturday, the 14th, Memorial Hall, 2 o'clock show.
So this is fantastic. These two venues, I mean, and they're mm-hmm. right down the street from each other. So yep. If you can find yourself someplace to stay,
sure.
Down on the waterfront.
Sure. John Carver Inn, you know, get a room there, take
get
the kids
a
out,
tour.
Bring a babysitter, and then the next day you go out to the Julie Rhodes show. So one for the kids, one for the adults.
I definitely... And what goes into booking stuff like this for Plymouth Rocks events?
Oh, a lot of stuff. Getting venues and then matching the artists with open dates and... Booking, you know, getting all your volunteers together to make sure people, you know, for ushers and ticket takers and making sure the band's happy and getting backstage ready and making sure your insurance is together and making sure you have your promotion and your Facebook and all your social media and your radio station that comes aboard, WATD, to help out. That's super. Doing interviews, setting up interviews and promotions and all that kind of stuff. So it's been something that I've been doing, you know, some little bit on every day since probably early May. So we're getting there. It's the home stretch, so we just hope people go to PlymouthRocksEvents.org to get tickets to one or both of these awesome shows.
Do you usually try to set an annual goal as for Plymouth Rocks events to try to, again, you talked about helping kids
right.
in regards to if they want to take lessons and stuff like that. Is it almost like... And it's that time of year, so excuse me. For the older folks, when they used to have the muscular dystrophy telethon with
right.
the great Jerry Lewis, and he would do it every year for $1 more. Is that
right.
Is that a mantra that's familiar?
It's really like, let's just, you know, because we're all part-time, obviously, so it's like a, you know, a skeleton crew pulling this off. So it's really like, let's just pull it off and get some money to the schools, and hopefully it's a little more than last year, and then next year hopefully it's bigger and we can just kind of keep growing. And I mean, I'd love to see it be more schools on the South Shore, obviously, not just Plymouth, but to kind of grow it into other towns and, you know, have a Plymouth Rocks connection with other school systems, you know, throughout the South Shore, South Coast would be fantastic. But first things first.
But being the founder of Plymouth Rocks events, I mean, for folks who don't know, what was the inspiration behind it? What made you one day just wake up and say, I need to put something together that's gonna help out kids who want to be active? Maybe they don't want to play sports. Maybe they want to get involved with the arts. Yeah.
I think it's, well, I was looking to do something, and then I think seeing other things happening and thinking like, oh, I could probably do something like that. Why can't I do something? Maybe I'll do something like that. And then I think when my daughter came home a couple years ago, talking about high school classes and picking classes, and it was art or music.
Mm.
And I went, wait, or can't you take art and music? And she's like, no, because of the curriculum and this and that. And so, you know, she was in a bind. She plays the flute. So she went, you know, with music, but she kind of gave up, you know, having art in school. And I was like, man, that's not good. It's unfortunate. Is there something I could do on the side to just, you know, keep the arts going somehow with kids? And that was kind of the onus of, well, what could we do and where should we do it and who's in with me and, you know, is this crazy or can we pull it off? And so that was really it. And I thought Plymouth was the place to be just because it's just so happening. Like you just said, just walking around down there, that's
fantastic.
It's the spot. They have,
love,
you know,
it.
They have Memorial Hall and the Spire Center and New World Tavern has like 100 capacity room. Like they have great spaces down there for music. I mean, there's a bunch of music there already. So I'm like, I think that's the spot to do it. So that's the first school system that we have hooked up with. And they were obviously thrilled to have someone come in and say, hi, I want to raise some money for you. And yeah, just this, you know, this past year we helped, I don't know, I think it's like 5 kids that went through the program for the year on us. So that was great.
Now, I know we're talking about these events, which are going to help ultimately raise money. But if folks wanted to just donate,
sure.
I would think that you'd gladly say sure.
Absolutely.
How can they do that?
We have a PayPal all set up at PlymouthRocksEvents.org as well. You can donate there. Every little bit helps. Don't be shy. Julie Rhodes tickets start at $15. So
that's fantastic.
You know, for $30, if you can't make it to the show, that's like picking up a pair of tickets. And then the Imagination Movers as well. You could get... you know, you could, if you can't make it or you don't have, you know, kids or grandkids or nieces, nephews, if you're kind of, you know, through that stuff, but you still, you know, like the idea of helping kids out, you can also go to PlymouthRocksEvents.org and, you know, donate through the PayPal. And that's just like buying tickets. It's going to go to the same spot.
Now, I know we sit here and we're talking music, but are there other items that you're hoping to offer for events, maybe film festivals or anything like that? Anything like that in the works?
Yep, absolutely. My goal is to have a film festival / music festival in Plymouth. They used to have a film festival a while ago. I just saw, for instance, WBCN History has a new movie out. I think it's called The American Revolution and WBCN.
Oedipus.
I saw it at, actually, it was all pre-Oedipus. It was 68 to 74. So probably Oedipus is just coming in there. But I just saw it at the Woods Hole Film Festival, and I'm like, I want to screen this in Plymouth. So I'm talking to the director of the film to bring it to Plymouth to have a screening. And then obviously if you do the film screening, it seems like you should have some music along with it. So I think some one-off events like that, some film and music combined events, as we build, you know, as we build up to do something that's as big as a festival, because that takes a lot of people to do it right.
And as an NPO, I imagine you have a board, folks who...
We do, yes, yep, we have a board. But again, everybody's, you know, this is part-time, on the side, volunteers, everybody. So you know, there's always some juggling with what, you know, people can do. So you try to get people that can help in specific areas. That's what I've learned. If you're all interested in the same thing, the same things aren't going to get done. So if you get that social media person, I mean, I'm good at social media, but if you go out and get that Svengali of social media.
Somebody who's good at legal.
Yes, yeah, all that kind of nuances. The nuances of it just helps take some things off my plate because it's a full enough plate.
Okay. What do you got coming up on tonight's show?
Tonight's Americana-rama starts 10 o'clock, and then there's so much new music in the Americana genre. It's truly amazing. I think I've said to you before that when I first had the idea for the show, I thought it was going to be a little bit more of the, you know, standard alt country 90s kind of stuff with some, you know, Johnny Cash.
First you seed your plant.
There's so much new music, and it's fantastic. Even tonight, you know, getting ready to come out, I burned my 101st CD in the last year of my show. Most of it new music.
Wow.
So, and some of it, you know, I might play once and go, yeah, that was all right. Some of it I might hear again and be like, yeah, I don't think I'm going to play that other stuff. I'll play a ton because I think it's great. So it doesn't all make, you know, the regular rotation. But there's, just to give you an idea of how much music is out there.
Yeah, we had Levitate. Yep. not too long ago. And I thought I saw comments from you in regards to some of the artists who were performing there.
Played a lot of Levitate bands, especially the Friday night show that was Shovels and Rope, Tedeschi Trucks Band. Who else is in there? Blackberry Smoke. Those are three acts I play all the time. So just to see them come and play in Marshfield was fantastic. There's other, the Wood Brothers played during the weekend. So many bands that play Levitate, I Spin at Night. So if you haven't heard the show before, as well as, some classic, the Neil Young and Stones and Petty and stuff that has a little twang to it. Dylan, I'll get all that stuff in there as well. And then the Midnight Bong at 12 o'clock.
Do you tease the bong or do you share details of what is in, what is packed into the bong?
I like that.
You like that?
Tonight's bong is, what am I calling it? Patsy Parton. So I'm doing Patsy Cline and Dolly Parton together for an hour, because as I will tell the audience later as well, I've been doing a lot of rock and rolling lately. It's been a lot of guys rocking and rolling. I'm like, I gotta switch.
Gotta let the ladies in.
I gotta switch this up a little bit. So I was like, maybe I'll do Dolly Parton. Then I'm like, probably an hour of Dolly's a little much.
Really?
So I was like, what can I, and then I'm like, oh, it's gotta be Patsy Cline, Dolly Parton. Boom, there it is. There's the Midnight Bell.
So, I mean, wow. I mean, so how do you go beyond, I only can name probably one or two Dolly by You Come Again, Islands in the Stream,
Nine to Five.
That was there. But that's. I think I just exhausted the mental catalog.
Right down the hallway in the vinyl vault here at WATD.
Oh, it's epic in there.
There's so many records, and I'll just go and I'll grab a stack of records. I'll bring them in and I'll be like, all right, here we go. I'm gonna drop the needle and I'm gonna play what sounds good and I'm gonna learn some more songs that I don't know. So it's a little musical discovery for everybody.
It's fantastic, that vinyl vault, knowing it that is. Not only what was accumulated over the past 40 years, and not just, from the record labels, but from the many, many yard sales. Yes, some of you know out there, because Eddie Perry has probably visited you and grabbed a few of these gems. Oh, I'll give you a quarter for this,
right. Right.
And then he brings in a year. It's true. Johnny Shea and some of the interns, they go through, oh, we've got five copies of this, Ed. It doesn't matter. We could still play it,
Right. And their original Let It Bleed Stones album. So it's probably a good idea to have a couple of those. So, yeah, there's so much vinyl down there. I forget who one night I was doing Stevie Wonder, and I'm like, I know, a good amount of Stevie Wonder. There must be, 13 Stevie Wonder records down there. I'm like, this is good, because here's the three or four that I know, and then here's all this other stuff. We drop the needle and we go. I don't plan too much every night with the show. I know what I'm going to play for the first song for Americana-rama. I know what the bong is. Everything else just happens as
it
happens.
Very organic.
Yes, it's anti-corporate radio playlist.
Well, I want to thank you again for taking time.
Thank you.
To join us here again.
Absolutely.
Remind folks, fantastic weekend of September 14th and 15th.
Yep. 14th with Imagination Movers, 2 o'clock matinee show for the kids, and then Sunday, the day after, 5 o'clock show with Julie Rhodes at the Spire Center, PlymouthRocksEvents.org for tickets and more info.
And I can't say it enough. If you are planning to go to either of these events, me, I would prefer you went to both, but I'm being a little greedy here. I'd be appreciative if you looked at these two events and pick one of them and spend the day in Plymouth.
Yep.
It will be worth it. Trust me, I know, because I've been to a few events in the downtown area, and it's wonderful just seeing people just kind of hanging out. Okay, walked by a couple of folks who were playing. There's a giant chessboard. They were hanging out
right,
there.
Right, right.
Some good stuff.
There's a lot of stuff happening there.
Taking the tours. So go spend time in America's hometown.
Absolutely.
And take in one of these shows. And again, visit PlymouthRocksEvents.org.
That's it.
And if folks want to find out more about your fantastic show, Monday through Thursday, how can they do that?
They can listen tonight at 10 o'clock or Facebook Americanorama page. You can go to the WATD Facebook page as well, 959WATD.com as well. Or just, yeah, keep hanging out for another 2 hours and hear me at 10.
Yeah, another 2 hours. And just to remind folks, coming up in just a few moments, I believe we have Crosscheck Radio. And that is with the former two-time Stanley Cup winner, Kevin Stevens, along with Andy Bernstein, Alex Bezanson. I will tease you that I'm going to probably be appearing in a couple of weeks. They've called me up from the AHL to be that fourth-line checker. Basically, yes. But it's an honor and privilege to be able to be on. Yeah, you found the sound effects. Very nice.
And you know you love them, Kevin.
I definitely do. More so when you do an applause for Mike Joshua,
right?
My fantastic guest here who has
he's
been
like,
on the show. But I want to thank everybody for tuning into tonight's great show. We will, of course, be back next week at 6:15 p.m. We got Kerry J. Byrne, who's going to be joining us for an hour. We can talk a little bit about Quincy and some of the great eateries they got there. And then you don't have the potentate of pigskin on without talking a little football.
Oh.
So that's going to be happening. We're going to get a little NFL preview next week.
Nice.
So stay tuned for that.
Mike, it's time.
Thank you so much.
Kevin, thank you.
Make sure you check out the great Mike Joshua coming up at 10 o'clock. But don't forget, Crosscheck Radio coming up in just a few moments here on 95.9 WATD. Have a good one.